City Council Meeting, June 21st, 2016.
Would you join me as we pray? The most gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for allowing us to be citizens of this great melting pot known as the United States of America, and for the great privileges that this great society allows us to enjoy. We are grateful for the freedom to worship freely and the ability to govern ourselves as we seek always to abide by your standards of morality and conduct. Much of the world can only yearn for the liberties that we often embrace. In our gratitude, may we never lose sight of the true foundations of this freedom. Help us to remember these institutions and the individuals who work in them as we seek to exist and to prosper. For to seek to exist and to prosper without integrity and morality and faith, we are reminded that we are doomed to failure. Make us fully aware of that inward compromise and complacency are far more deadly than external threats. Bless the decisions of this council today as you guard and guide all those who serve our community. May your living presence in our hearts and minds be evident in this session today, as well as in our community. For it is in your holy name we do pray, and amen.
Okay, welcome again, and Angel, would you please call the roll?
Sure. Mr. Gwynn?
Here.
Mr. Molliver?
Here.
Mr. Musley?
Here.
Mr. Wardell?
Here.
Mr. Hilty?
Here. Okay, moving on, item 1C, new employees. We have Nicole Kapolovitz from Fire Department. Nicole here? Okay, welcome. And John Dumas from Public Works Department? Welcome. Thank you for coming on board, and I hope you get something out of today's meeting. Awards and presentations. We have a presentation from the Florida League of Cities. Okay, is Mr. Baxley here, or the recipient, or? Oh, there he is. I didn't even see you hidden there.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council, Rebecca O'Hara with the Florida League of Cities, and I'm here to present an award today to express our appreciation to Representative Dennis Baxley for his assistance, his help, his continued open door to hear the concerns of local governments. He chairs the Local and Federal Affairs Committee, and you know they get really busy there during session, and I have to tell you that Representative Baxley is always there to listen and to hear the concerns that we relay on your behalf on various issues that come up before his committee. A couple of things to note in particular that we can thank him for today. And in this past legislative session, I think one of the most noteworthy things he did on your behalf is to play an instrumental role in helping to keep a bill addressing maximum millage rates, to keep it limited to changing the notification requirements for setting millage rates. The Senate version of this bill was vastly different, and it would have imposed a huge fiscal impact to cities throughout the state, and Representative Baxley was very helpful in ensuring that the House bill stayed intact and limited as it was. And lastly, he was a co-sponsor of a bill that's important to a lot of folks in residential areas throughout the state. He co-sponsored House Bill 41, which addressed some of the conflicts associated with backyard gun ranges in residential areas. And so for these things and a host of others that are probably too long to take up your time with here today, but I could go on, the Florida League of Cities, on behalf of all the cities, of the state of Florida would like to express its appreciation to Representative Baxley for his hard work and continued help to cities across the state.
Mayor? We don't speak in committee unless you tell us we can speak. That's the way we're used to.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I really owe this to you. I have great local officials to work with. We don't criticize each other. We understand. We come to the table from different angles, different things to solve, but we always work together. And that's what I learned from you. And I learned how important that is. To me, it's very important, the relationship that local government and state government have. We serve the same people, and they want us to work through things and help things work out, not be adversaries, but be mutual partners in serving the constituents that we share. Maybe being a former mayor commissioner kind of helps me see that side of the table, but I know that's what our constituents deserve. All they get is the bill either way. What she's really telling me is the reason they like me is I kill stuff. You know, we pass too much stuff sometimes, and a lot of things sound good in one setting, and then we all live with the fallout all over the state. And so someone's trying to fix a problem in a specific area, and they bring legislation, and many times it's not really good legislation for all of us. And so I always try to keep that in mind. North Central Florida is my home. I'm a native of Ocala, and I think I owe this community and the surrounding communities our very best in service. So it's a privilege to serve alongside you. Thank you for what you do locally, and I'm most appreciative to the association of which you are a member for recognizing some of the work that I've tried to do. But I always think of you when we're looking at local government, local affairs. And I always ask the question, do we have to do this? Is the world going to be better? Or is it going to be more difficult? And if we don't need it, then we shouldn't do it. And we should try to, as much as possible, give you room to solve problems locally, because government that's closest to the people is best. They can get to you. They know where you live. And they can communicate their needs. They can do so with us, too. But definitely the local officials is where the first contact is and where it hits the ground. The good news is, as I travel this region of the state recently as a Senate candidate, there's about 20 communities in Senate District 12 that I've been looking at and working to befriend people in. And the exciting thing about it is in hometown America, things are pretty good. They really are. I mean, they have struggles. I know you work on problems and challenges all the time. That's what we do. But if you get out of here and you look around and you visit your communities and you see the things that have happened because of your service, sometimes in spite of our service, but hometown America still has a spirit of America. You heard it in the prayers. It's hometown America that we need to protect and serve. And so I try never to forget that. I hope all of you always feel free to call on me. Correct me, straighten me out, fix me up, inform me. The most important communication any legislator gets is somebody close to the issue. I know that person. They live in my district. They serve people, and they're bringing a solution to a concern. That is still the most valuable piece of information. There's no answers in Tallahassee. There's actually no money in Tallahassee. We plan on the money that the people will be able to send us. And we redistribute that to meet needs. The day-to-day work of local leaders, solving local issues, loving each other, taking care of each other, fighting with each other over things they care about. That's the heart of America. Thank you for letting me be a small part of interacting in that way with you. God bless you.
And thank you for what you do again. Andy?
Can I get a picture? I always like to have a picture. Thank you.
You should also know you are well represented. There's a lot of different sized communities, a lot of different needs. And everything that they have to deal with doesn't fit every pair of shoes. But they're always listening, and they're always bringing us your perspective. And we appreciate that. It's necessary. And when we mess up, we meet every year. It's just a big, long conversation. Stay at the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Item 2B, Chamber of Economic Partnership, quarterly update. Mr. Kevin Shealy.
Good afternoon, Council and Mayor. Good to see you as always. Happy to give you our quarterly update from the CEP. An updated metrics is there at your seat to look at. Let me give you a couple of highlights, and I'll be happy to take any questions that you all might have on this. The very positive thing I can tell you, among many others, is that our activity level continues to be very, very strong. Normally, we would expect in this time of the year to see activity lessen, certainly not see a lot of new activity. June is usually a slower month as we come into the summer. And traditionally, that's what we would expect in a presidential election year. However, as we talk to our friends from throughout Florida and, in fact, around the Southeast, that's what they're telling us. Our experience is a little different. Our activity level is staying very strong. We currently have about 40 active projects, with about 10 to 12 of those being late-stage projects, which we like, and some good activity, and continue to see new projects come down the pike. On retention, that to me is the most exciting thing of what's going on as we look at our companies that we're assisting, where the CEP is being able to provide assistance to local companies who are expanding. Through the first 5 months of the year, we've been able to help local companies invest over $8 million in our community, create over 500 jobs. We anticipate that investment number by the end of the year to be somewhere between $18 and $20 million in investment. And that's exciting because that means not only are they investing back in our community, they're planning for the future, they're obviously creating jobs when they do that. And we know one of the things that you all like at the end of that is they're going to pay some more taxes. And so that's a great win for everyone across the board. The last area I would mention is in our business creation efforts. One of the things that we've been working towards the last couple of years is growing our access to capital. And we've taken very deliberate steps in that, moving towards providing more opportunities for that. Early this year in January, we began an angel network, an angel chapter in conjunction with the Florida Angel Nexus. There are six cities in Florida where they operate: Miami, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Tallahassee, and Ocala. And this chapter is getting off to a great start. In fact, they just gave us word that as they're doing an impact analysis, the most investment is currently coming out of Ocala. And so that's providing opportunity for people here to invest and to grow, keeping them here, keeping their dollars in our state. And it's also opening up the opportunity for us to get businesses who might need angel investing in front of this group, whether it's a local chapter or a chapter somewhere else in the state, but opens up more access to capital. We think that's really important, and we're excited to see Ocala in that position. With that, I will stop, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you all might have on this third quarterly update.
Any big projects coming,
Kevin? I think we might have one coming down the pike relatively soon. We're optimistic. I would tell you a date, but I would have told you a date a year ago, and I would have been wrong. So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks.
Thank you. On item number 11, you have corporate visits. Is there any dollar amount of or the size of a corporation that you use to categorize those?
Sure. So these would be companies, not necessarily dollar amount, but they're our primary employers, which means they're manufacturing, distribution, or large office. And if it's a corporate visit, they're not based here. So it's not a local company. It's someone who has a facility, a branch here, and we're going to visit corporate. Because many times we want to make sure they understand, the corporate officials, the opportunities for expansion here, ways that we can assist them. My past experience with that is we may find out a problem before the local facility knows there's a problem. And so it's not really based on size, but obviously it's big enough that they're not headquartered here.
I just wasn't sure how you categorize the two.
Right. It's where we're going and visiting someone who's not headquartered here, but they have one of those primary employer operations here.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay. As always, Council, thank you all.
Okay, moving on to item C, we have a service award for Larry Miller.
Where you want? Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
And we have another 20-year service award for CSR Scotland. Okay, next we'll move into item three, public comments, and I have two people that are requested to appear. First one is Khalid Shabizz. Is Khalid here? Nope. Anybody recognize him at all?
No, he's not here.
Okay,
all right. Also known as Jeffrey Shields.
No. Okay. Pass that one down. Next one is Carolyn Torrey. state your name, address, and you have 3 minutes, please.
Yes, my name is Carolyn Torrey. I reside at 1202 Southeast 14th Avenue.
That's over.
That's the whole answer.
No, no.
Is it, I got it set?
There you go. Okay, thank you.
Hi, how are you doing today? Basically, I have some serious concerns about equity of the investigations that are ongoing that are not being done in the Ocala Police Department. And I understand that it's okay for your police department to make personal exclusions on the people they investigate. And then there was another very disturbing behavior that was demonstrated, was the fact that a personal use of your police department using police officers for personal use or a personal attorney named Mark Shelnut. When your police chief was questioned of why he sent Dennis Yontz, one of the officers, to the city to deliver a personal letter for Mark Shelnut, and then later went all the way out to Akawaha, outside city's jurisdiction, it was very disturbing. He also indicates that he gives preferential treatment to his friends in the choice of investigations in that interview. When one of the names came up on a school board, former school board member by the name of Sue Mosley, he got very upset and slammed his hand down on the table. I have Auditor General's findings about the theft of funds, of school board funds, and needs to be prosecuted. If we cannot get a fair, equal shake in here, then it is time for you to send this up to the next level and have a special statewide prosecutor to come in here to do the investigations that we are unable to do because of personal relationships that are ongoing in our police department. And one of the persons that's involved in there, unfortunately, I have to say it, happens to be some people very close to some of our members. In fact, one of them happens to be a neighbor whose brother is a judge. And I was very, when I did my records research, I also found out that the city had given this judge money to tear down a building. And I thought, on private land. I'm very concerned on how our tax dollars are being spent. And I have documents, and I have one. I was attacked in Marin County Public Schools because they were in a 28-year lawsuit with the Department of Justice. I noted, and I won the federal findings, and Marin County Public Schools is still under federal review with issuance of annual reports because I say dogmatic on it. And they did everything they could to take me off track, including 5 law firms. $750,000 are at stake that your officers refuse to take action on. The personal needs to stop or the feds will be here. My name is Carolyn Torrey, 352-840-5464. You need to go ahead and you need to contact and you need to do a full investigation. This is illegal activity, and it needs to stop.
Okay, thank you for your information. We'll take it on. Mayor, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that? I don't think so. Okay, thank you. Move that on. Moving on to item four, no public hearings. Item 5, second and final readings of ordinances. Item 5A. Adopt Ordinance 2016-36, amending the ordinance for the Firefighters Retirement Plan, amending Section 43-25, 43-27, 43-28, and 43-35. Introduced by Mr. Mollis. Want to do it for Ms. Mary Sue Rich?
I move that Ordinance Number 2016-36 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala, except that adoption by sections on the second reading be waived and based on evidence presented to the city council.
Have a motion and a second? Ms. Kelly, you want to add anything to that? Okay.
An ordinance of the City of Ocala, Florida, amending Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan set forth in Chapter 43 of the City Code, amending and adding new definitions for a second tier in Section 43-21 of the City Code, lowering the employee contribution to 8.17% in Section 43-25 of the City Code, reducing the drop interest rate for the second tier in Section 43-27 of the City Code, amending the provisions for military buyback in Section 43-28 of the City Code, amending the COLA in Section 43-35 for the City Code, providing for severability of provisions, providing for codification, repealing all ordinances in conflict herewith, and providing an effective date.
Good evening, Cindy Kelly, Director of Budget and Legislative Affairs. To summarize, this is the culmination of the pension reform that we underwent with the fire union. And this is codifying those things that we agreed to in the current collective bargaining agreement that is in place. The drop was changed to be from 1 to 3%, a variable percentage rate for the drop. The overtime is capped at 300 hours per fiscal year. And the new salary definition is base wages and educational incentive pay, excluding all other compensation. Members that are not within 5 years of normal retirement will no longer receive the supplemental benefit of the $10 for each full year of credited service. We came to an agreement for the sharing of the state monies that we receive. Half of the annual insurance premium tax revenues above the $248,401 shall be used to fund the cost of living or the COLA adjustment for the firefighters, and half is being dedicated to pay down the plan's unfunded liability. The agreement also provides that when the plan's funded ratio reaches 90%, that all of the premium taxes above the 240,401 will be used to fund the COLA for the firefighters. The COLA formula of how that money will be expended is also codified in the ordinance. We are taking $1 million and putting that towards the unfunded liability from that balance that had been accrued. There was $3.5 million accrued in the COLA balance. $1 million went to pay down the unfunded, and the other $2.5 million was credited to the COLA fund. And that COLA fund will earn interest separately and accrue for the benefit of the firefighters. The retirement board, the IFF, everybody's in agreement on codifying everything. We recommend approval.
Council, have any further questions, comments? Any public questions or comments on this here? Yes, sir.
Robert Altman, Professional Firefighters of Ocala, 1013 East, Silver Spring Boulevard. I just wanted to stand up for a second and say, working with the staff, since the current changes and the new staff has been in place from previous administration, you can see how fast working with John, Cindy, and the rest of the staff to get things done, it's been a tremendous change for all of us. So I thank you for that. We're very happy with the pension ordinance, the way it worked out, the way we all sat down and worked as a team together to come up with something that was palatable for both sides. So I just wanted to say thanks. We did unanimously vote this in. This was something that we've been looking for a long time. The only thing our pension was missing was a COLA fund. I believe with the current money being moved over to unfunded liability, we're over 78% funded, which is the best out of the three plans you have in the city, and that's because we've been watching our plan closely for ourselves. But I would like to say working with the staff has been, this new staff that's been in, working with John has been great, so I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other further public comments? Thought the chief was coming up. Okay. There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Leslie?
Aye.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Hilton?
Aye. Excuse me. Item 5B, adopt ordinance 2016-37 concerning yard setback and height requirements for a hospital in the Institutional Zoning District, case number COD-16-0003, introduced by Councilman Brent Molliver on June 7th, 2016.
Mr. Chairman, I move that ordinance number 2016-37 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala, except that adoption by sections on second reading be waived and based on staff's recommendation for case number COD-16-0003 and other evidence presented to the City Council.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Wardell. Angel?
An ordinance of the City of Ocala, Florida concerning zoning, amending section 122-3, providing for definitions, by revising the definition of a medical laboratory, amending section 122-286, providing for lot requirements, by referencing criteria regarding the institutional zoning district, yards in height requirements for hospitals in the high intensity slash central core land use classification, amending section 122-505, by revising the institutional zoning district yards and height requirements for a hospital in the high intensity slash central core land use classification, providing for severability, providing for the repeal and conflicting ordinances, and providing for an effective date.
Ty Chickazilla, Growth Management. This supports economic development, and it does two things. One is, in the previous, in the past, when MRNC expanded, they had to get a special exception for height and some of their setbacks. Instead of making them go through that again, because they have already reached an 80 feet in terms of height, we're just proposing to amend the code, and it only really pertains to the central core, which is consistent with the comp plan to have higher and taller buildings. So this allows them to go up to 100 feet. I don't think they'll be doing that. It'd be closer to 80, and also to reduce the setbacks. And then also the ordinance addresses a definition with medical labs in terms of how medical labs and medical offices function together. So staff recommends approval.
Okay, thank you. Any council members have any questions or comments? Any public questions or comments on item 5B? Bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Hilton?
Aye. 6, general business, approved contract with Monroe Icofano Goldsmith Incorporated to develop a Midtown master plan in the amount of $211,876 plus contingency funds of $18,000. Presentation by Mr. John Zobler.
Thank you, Mr. President. City Council, Mayor, I'll apologize in advance. There's quite a bit of material to cover here, but this is a very important plan for the city. It presents probably more challenges than we had previously experienced with the downtown master plan. There's a lot of variables associated with the Midtown master plan, and so I want to take you through those quickly. I want to take a moment just to remind council of the plans that this council has approved in the past and the work that has come out of those, and you see the plans that are listed there. A great deal of planning has been put in place and authorized by this council, and much good has come from it. And again, I'm not going to read you through this, but in the downtown master plan, you can see the evidence of what is happening now around us 12 years later, but nonetheless, City Council stayed the course, and these improvements that you see on the screen, whether they were improvements to Broadway or Magnolia, Fort King, the downtown market, Citizen Circle, so on and so forth, the parking garage, these are steps that were followed through by City Council and by staff to make the plan to bring it to fruition so that we receive value from authorizing the plan. In the Vision 2035 plan, it also called for the creation of a series of community neighborhoods, and that's why City Council authorized the creation of all of these community redevelopment areas. Again, we now have 4 community redevelopment areas, East Ocala, West Ocala, North Magnolia, and the downtown. And each of those have their own plans, and each of those have been and will be progressing. And you see some of the other improvements that have come as a result of the Vision 2035 plan. In the Vision 2035 plan, we also had great community involvement, as well as the Downtown Master Plan. And I think with the Midtown Master Plan, we can expect the same thing. Again, and in the Parks Master Plan, more specifically, you know, a lot of that centered on Tuscarora Park, but it also centered on the pocket parks throughout the city, as well as the parks you see listed on this screen. And again, my point in bringing this to your attention is that council has authorized plans in the past, and tangible results have occurred from those plans, and they're all right there for you to review. These are our realities. And again, even the smaller things that were called for in the Parks Master Plan, a tremendous amount of progress has been made. When staff has a plan and council authorizes the funding to provide the resources, to provide the direction, staff is able to deliver on the plan. And so the Midtown Master Plan, we talked about this at the strategic retreat, as you recall, back in January, and City Council said that priority number one on the economic hub is that you wanted the staff to focus on the Midtown area. And the priority number four was that we wanted staff to concentrate on how do we manage, coexist with the social services that we have now provided in the downtown and the Midtown area. For your reference, just for your frame of reference again for the public, Midtown is considered to be Northeast 9th Street to the north, State Road 40 to the south, Northeast 9th Avenue to the east, and the CSX rail line, which circles behind Interfaith, to the west. Here's basically the land use, the general land use, and you see in here that the pink is largely commercial property, the green is governmental use, black is industrial use, and the yellow is your residential use. So there's a good mix of different types of uses, strong mixes within this area. And this is the memories of Midtown. Now these are dated, but as you see in the upper right-hand corner, when we had parallel parking on State Road 40, we had active storefronts along Concord Square and that whole front there. And then when the Marion Hotel was active, we had storefronts and garages and automobile dealerships. And of course, when the post office was in place, this was an active place of the city as the downtown is. Now that's a while ago, and certainly much has happened since then, but this used to be a very synergistic center for the city. And so the challenges that we're facing today is there is a lack of synergy. We have these dominant uses in the Midtown area, which are judicial, business, social services, medical, cultural, recreation. And what we've seen, and I'll show you shortly, as you all well know, we've had waves of disinvestment in this area for a variety of reasons. And we've always talked about for a long time about the barriers that have been created by making State Road 40 four lane, by making Northeast 8th Avenue Road four lane. We separated the Tuscarora and Wyoming communities from the parks by creating that large barrier. Same thing happened with State Road 40. And we've been trying to solve at least the State Road 40 challenge for some time now. And in the Midtown area, we have a lack of social gathering spaces for people who work at the judicial center or at the industry or the retail to have these gathering places. Council also talked about recently about the migration and the deterioration that is occurring in the Tuscarora and the Wyoming areas, that there's a migration that's happening that's affecting that area. And that's why council focused on Midtown. And again, we can always use closer to the core more residential living. And again, just to remind you visually in the public, we're talking about substantial judicial and legal services. These are great professional positions, great industry to have in there. And along with these services, you see we have a number of professional law offices, probation services, guardian ad litem, Salvation Army operates correction services. For business, we have industrial, office professional, and retail. And we also have very important social services. We have a lot of safety net programs in the area. Interfaith is a great example. You know, as I talk about Interfaith or the Salvation Army or any of the other social services in here, you know, some of the best and most caring and giving people in our community are supporting these agencies and these charities. And so these are high-quality social safety net services. But within the area now, taking you back to the map, you see the density that has happened in this particular area of Midtown. You see the uses that are indicated on this map and others that are in close proximity. So there is a density of safety net services in the Midtown area. That's neither good nor bad. It's just a reality that it is there. And again, to drill that down a little bit further to make it even tighter, again, you can see the density of those services in this particular area. And again, everybody is familiar with Salvation Army. We have Unity Place in Tuscarora Park. We have Sheepsgate Church, Four Square Church, and of course, Children's Home Society, which is another very important social service in our area. Going back to Interfaith for a moment, so many high-quality services are provided there, emergency shelter services, feeding programs, registration for federal assistance. There are some very high-quality programs that happen at Interfaith with an excellent staff. But you also know that we've heard discussions about Interfaith wanting to expand their services, relocate the soup kitchen, and expand their shelter services. And so that is on our horizon as a desire of that agency. Likewise, the Board of Adjustment has already approved expansion of the Salvation Army, and that is imminent pending their receipt of CDBG funds. Medical services, this is a medical service in the core of Midtown now that has some dispensary-type services also for certain types of addictions. And we have, again, to round out all of the different uses in the Midtown area, we have an emerging cultural arts district, which includes the Riley Arts Center, the art that's on display at the park, the development of the art park, MAX. It's an emerging cultural arts district for the city. And again, you're familiar with these images. This is the current status of the art park. But again, a significant investment by the city to create a cultural center, as well as the Discovery Science Center, which continues to evolve and expand. So we've talked about waves of disinvestment, and these are some good examples of this. Because of the business climate in the area, people have not necessarily kept up with their properties. And you know that over the last decade, we've seen the waves of disinvestment, whether it was Toffoletti Hardware or Bay Cleaners or the WIT building, we call that, and of course, the Sawaya Garage. Council authorized several years ago a demolition fund, which allowed us to clear that blight out. And so all of those buildings that I just mentioned, in addition to Southern Plate and Glass and others, we cleared the landscape and removed that blight, hoping for redevelopment in the area. And so everything you see in red has been demolished through the demolition program, again, to clear the blight from the area. The Sovereign Building is an endangered historic landmark. It has its own challenges in that it is under a condominium form of ownership, and it is difficult for the Homeowners Association to galvanize to address the problems with that building. But it's an important structure in the city. It's not going to go anywhere anytime soon, and they've faced some security challenges with keeping people off of their roof lines and accessing their stairwells. We've also heard about deteriorating neighborhoods, most particularly on Northeast 9th Avenue Road. It's the first barrier as you get into Tuscola and Wyoming Park. And again, that's a view of the corridor. That is, the migration of that deterioration is occurring. And so there are collateral impacts. We've all seen that from some of the services that are provided in the Midtown area. People are displaced when services are not provided, and they must congregate and essentially kill time. And we know that we have public feeding programs that are now happening in the Midtown area, again, by very caring and thoughtful people, but again, there are collateral impacts associated with those services occurring. Another symptom of the problem that's occurring is, as a result of the impacts from these services, the negative aspects of the services, we've begun plastering the downtown with signs, affixing signs to buildings, warning people that if you're not belong here, you're going to be arrested for trespassing, as well as panhandling. We also have on the lower left, you see that shops have begun to pull in their furniture. So we have dedicated railing space, and this is not the only shop. We have dedicated railing space where patrons will normally gather to enjoy products. But because of the negative impacts, they've pulled the furniture in. And so again, moving back to connectivity for a minute, this is Silver Springs Boulevard. That creates quite a barrier between the downtown area and the Midtown area. Most recently, in the upper right-hand corner, we instituted parallel parking. And even though those storefronts aren't necessarily activated, you can see the effect that parallel parking simply had, and that looks like an active space now. People immediately gravitated to that, and it looks like an active storefront. And I believe in the future that can be activated. Northeast Avenue Road, 8th Avenue, we talked about that briefly. I think as part of this process, if City Council approves a Midtown Master Plan, you may see a recommendation to put that on a road diet to potentially install medians, and to get that back down to a two-lane in the hopes of connecting the Tuscarawas and Wyomena Parks neighborhoods back to the park and back to the downtown. That's something that could possibly happen. The good news is that there has been signs of reinvestment in the area. Those are some great examples of companies that have reinvested in the area. There are current signs today of reinvestment in the area, whether it's the Alarion Bank building, or Mr. Murphy's building, or even in the Sovereign building, there are signs of reinvestment. And on 8th Avenue Road, there is some reinvestment that's occurring. And one of the tasks for this firm to do this work will be the identification of catalytic sites, not unlike what we're seeing with the parking garage. What is it going to take to reignite this area to get business interest, a residential interest, or retail interest, whatever it is? And these are just examples of potential catalytic sites. You've seen these images before, the hotel on the boulevard and what that could possibly be. Again, more catalytic sites that we may get some financial analysis on. What kind of incentives will it take? What will we need to attract people to develop these sites? So on the Midtown Master Plan, this is the process that we went through. I've kept council informed that we were soliciting for a firm to do a master plan for Midtown. We were fortunate that the company that did the master plan for the downtown area is the same company that was the only company that bid for the Midtown area. Great team. The same principles remain, so they're very familiar with downtown Ocala and Ocala in general. You see who the members were on the selection committee, which included Councilman Wardell. And this is pretty much the timeline of how it will work. These are the important phases. A great deal of stakeholder involvement that will be from brokers and developers, from the business community, from the public, from our elected officials, both local and at the county level, plus P&Z, stakeholders from the social service agencies. There will be a number of meetings to get everybody's input as to create a master plan, just like we did before. These are the costs, timeline of costs. As I mentioned, it's 8 months to complete the master plan. If council approves this document, we will hit the ground running in July, kick the plan off. Those are the different costs for the different phases, and this plan will conclude in February of 2017. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. If you have any questions concerning the need or where we're going with that, I'd love to hear it.
Any questions from council or further input?
Yeah. You know what, I first saw this agenda item. But I think you've very well put out there the success we've had with some of the other plans and specific projects that have come to fruition from those. Very proud of what we've accomplished downtown, what we've accomplished at Tuscarawas Cup Park, mm-hmm. what we're about to accomplish out at Woodley and Bryant and Scott Springs. So while I'm not one to like plans, I think this is probably money well spent, and I will support it.
Yeah, and just echo some of Councilman Musley's comments. You know, sometimes Jay was saying, you know, sometimes we do studies and they sit on a shelf and collect dust. This one was not one of those. This has been kind of our Bible for downtown that we followed. It's taken some time. We've had some missteps, but as we continue to follow it, you see these great things happening across the street and all throughout the downtown. I had mentioned to Councilman this morning that back in 2002, 2003, we spent $180,000 for the master plan. This is $229,000, 14 years later, and I think it's well worth, you know, the money. So I look, and the nice thing is that the same folks are back again, and they can kind of see the fruits of our success in what they did, you know, some 14 years ago. So it'd be exciting to have them come back and build on what they've already accomplished, or we've accomplished with them. So I'll look forward to this.
Yeah, they're excited also.
Good.
Yeah, this is exciting because I too have seen plans put on the shelf after we paid back in the early days. $20,000 and $30,000 and $40,000, which is the same thing as today, of $200,000, and we're using them. We're starting to put things together, and I'm 100% for it.
Second.
Motion and a second?
Mr. President, I'm sorry, I neglected that. I was moving so fast. Could I ask Chief Graham to come up just to inform council of what his interim plans would be in terms of management of some of the adverse effects? I was going to pull him in. I apologize, Chief. I got ahead of myself. Do you mind if he addresses that?
Yeah, this is to deal with the issue that we talked about at last council meeting, so this is the report. Tying it into what we're doing here. So.
Greg Graham, Police Chief. So we looked at a lot of possibilities of what we could do from having two officers assigned down there full-time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to one officer full-time for that amount of time, or two officers for part-time. And the price tag of these are, well, they're pretty high, because I don't have the staffing as it stands right now to be able to dedicate two officers or even one officer down there full-time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just, I don't have it. So the cost for the two officers full-time is just shy of $1 million a year. The cost for four officers full-time, obviously, is just shy of $500,000 a year. So in the meantime, the idea is that we handle like one of our special details, our off-duty jobs, like when the movie theaters hire us to send officers out. They pay us so much money, and doing that as a downtown detail. And the beautiful thing about that for us is, and the way we figured it would be 84 hours worth of time per week, and we can alter the times, the days, the number of officers, where we concentrate on a daily basis for the most part. And the price tag of that is $175,000 a year. And we can start it and stop it instantaneously. So it's, you know, if we got to a point where we thought, well, okay, we don't need anybody for the next maybe month or couple weeks, we could stop it, save the money, or spend the money or whatever. So if we start it right now, I think that we'll probably end up with enough money in our budget this year based on some of the money that was held back from us and our salaries to be able to cover it. If not, then I would need it some more, and then the $175,000 for next year would actually go into our budget that you would consider and approve next year. But I wanted to see if you guys were okay with that interim step as opposed to hiring new cops.
I think that, you know, some of the things I've heard from some of the local business people is police presence will sometimes just automatically start moving some things out. So hopefully that'll have that effect, and I think it's a great first step. Hopefully we don't need to go for more. That maybe, you know.
Well, and just as an example, while I was sitting here, part of the reason I walked out is I got a phone call from one of the business people downtown going, there's somebody right now in the middle of the road panhandling. Please send somebody. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they didn't call the cops. I guess maybe because they're a friend, but apparently I can't have friends and answer phone calls from them. So it's constantly ongoing, and we realize that. So we're trying to build.
I know that years ago there used to be bicycles, there used to be horses, and then you had redistricting and all that type of change, but, you know.
Well, the city's grown a lot over the years, too, and our calls for service have not only grown, but they've changed
right.
The types. And there's just no way in the world I could stand here in front of you and say, we got it, don't worry about it, we'll put somebody down there full-time, you'll always see a cop, because that's just not going to, I can't do that. With this, I can guarantee that at least one or two officers during the time that they're on that detail will be there. We won't pull them off unless, you know, the world comes to an end.
Mm-hmm. Chief, Chief, I think that's a great idea to get started with.
Yes.
It saves money for everybody and gives the cop, the policeman, a little extra cash in their pockets.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a win-win for everybody.
For everybody. I think we should try it and see what happens.
Chief, I just want to understand the number. So, for the 175, that's you think 84 hours a week or so of coverage?
Yes, sir. That's an average of 84 hours a week. Some weeks we do 84, some weeks we do less, some weeks we do more, but that we would keep that within that.
And then it was like $500,000 for, that would be 24 hours a day.
$1 million. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, two cops. $500,000, one cop. Yeah, because in order to have two cops down there 24 hours a day, 12-hour shifts, you need eight cops. One, you need four cops.
So
We're not like the fire department. We actually don't get to sleep on duty. So.
Okay. His son's a firefighter. Gosh.
It's all right. Sorry, Chief Clark. But. Well, they're not supposed to sleep on duty. Okay.
Was a firefighter. Does this mean we have to put a donut shop downtown?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would certainly attract more of us down there, that's for sure.
I'm just trying to help you out.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wardell.
Okay, back to the serious nature. I think it is. I think it's a great step, and we'll see.
Let me back to the numbers that he was talking about. It's 500 if it's a detail officer, because we first talked about 600,000 for six officers, cars, and officers. Then we were talked about 300,000, no cars, and keeping the cars we have, and then having six officers, and then the detail, which we liked, was 182,000, right? Two officers.
Roughly 175,000 for, it could be three officers, it could be four officers, or one officer. We can change it around depending on what's going down there, so it doesn't matter.
All right. Well, you know, one of the things we talked about is when this garage opens, we need to have a major, you know, police presence there that, you know, people feel safe, going in there, coming out, because, when it opens, have a bad experience, it's going to be bad news travels fast, good news travels in, or bad news travels even faster.
Once they have that first bad experience, they're not going to come back and use the garage.
And I'm sure it's going to be well lit, and I know that you talked about having, cameras and stuff that are connected to the comm center. And
that's right.
So we can see things that happen and respond to them quickly. So, this is a good first step. And I can tell you guys that since we talked last time, one of the things, and I know y'all sent you this copy of the ordinance that we enforced on the impeding the flow of pedestrian traffic, our police officers have done an amazing, amazing job of cleaning up a lot of the problems around the Starbucks area in the downtown very nicely, very quietly, but they're just continually getting rid of that. Today, after I left crime stat meeting, they had three police officers over, at least three, over by the Salvation Army where they smoke a lot of crack and do a lot of K2. Excuse me. And trespassed all of them, got a trespass warrant from Alice to trespass anybody on that lot, Rand Pudi's office, Gary Simon's office. So from now on, there's not going to be any hanging out over there without trespassing. So you'll see, should see a big change there.
Okay. All right. But
they've been doing an amazing job.
Appreciate it, Chief. Back to now item 6A, I have a motion and a second for approval. Are there any other further public comments on this item? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Leslie.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Ms. Nolte.
Aye. Item 6B, adopt budget resolution 2016-153, contract with Moore Iacofano Gulfman Incorporated to develop a Midtown Master Plan in the amount of $229,876 and a $19,508 fund to a newly created social services coordinator position through the end of this fiscal year. Presentation by Cindy Kelly.
Good evening, Cindy Kelly, Director of Budget and Legislative Affairs. This is the funding resolution to accompany the Downtown Master Plan that Council just approved. In addition, it is to fund for the remainder of the current year the new position to go along with the plan. Staff recommends approval.
I move.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any further council discussion?
I got a question.
Sure.
What will the annual salary of that person be, John?
It's $55,000, I believe.
$55,000. That's in line with what we had on the downtown position that we had for a while, wasn't it?
You know, I don't know what the prior position was. I wrote the job description based upon similar work in other cities, and I sent that to our compensation specialist. And that's the number that he came up with.
Very good. Thank you.
Chief, any further questions? Any public comment? Yeah, bring it back to council. I need to call the roll.
Molliver.
Aye.
Musson.
Aye.
Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
Aye. Approve a 2-year agreement for the Chamber and Economic Partnership, CEP, to operate the Ocala Downtown Market. Presentation by John Zobler.
Thank you. This will be much briefer, Mr. President, City Council. As you're well aware, that we've been working on the creation of the farm market for some time now, since the chamber lot was consumed with a contract to develop a mixed-use product on it. Today, as a matter of fact, a good portion of the concrete floor underneath the shed row was poured. We expect that project to be complete by the end of August. The farm market continues to operate on a month-to-month basis on the square. We are recommending that council approve a 2-year agreement with the CEP. We believe that the farm market is an extension of the incubator campus that's happening over there now, that many of the vendors that will be coming to the market also have online businesses which they wish to grow to sell their products, in addition to helping them be better prepared at the market. The CEP also has a number of professional staff that specialize in marketing and promotion, vendor management and application intake process, facilities management. It just seems like a very good match to us and also to the CEP. In terms of expenses, the CEP will not derive a profit from this operation of the market. And we are trying to, the CEP will execute a separate MOU with the DBA in terms of providing funding to them from the market, funding that they had previously enjoyed when the market operated on the square. The city will still remain responsible. You know that we put some water spigots over there so that we can rinse the floors, and there'll be Wi-Fi, and there will be some lighting costs with the electric and the operation of the fans. The city will bear those expenses, which we expect them to be nominal. All the other expenses will be borne by the CEP. Last comment I'll make is that it is the goal, ultimately, to create a magnetic destination at this location and to expand the market to a multi-day as soon as we can. So those are kind of the broader goals at this point. And again, we hope to complete that project by the end of August. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Zobler?
We retain it. I think it's only 4 times a year. We could use it for different events if the city deemed it needed to.
Yeah, especially, Mr. Wardell, as the site where the hotel is going now, as we lose that green space, events like FAFLA or other large downtown events, it may be necessary to suspend the market so that that space can be used to support other events, and that's provided for in the agreement.
What do we do right now when FAFLA comes downtown? Do we suspend the farmers market?
Yes, yes. And they operate in Bank of America lot. It really spreads out.
Okay, I'll look for a motion to approve item 6C.
Second.
I got a motion and a second. Any further council questions? Any further public comment questions? Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Hilton.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 6D, adopt budget resolution 2016-154. Amending the fiscal year 2015-2016 budget to purchase equipment for the new Ocala Fire Rescue Tower truck in the amount of $122,994.
Good evening. Cindy Kelly, Director of Budget and Legislative Affairs. In the current fiscal year budget, Council approved the purchase of a new tower truck, which is in addition to our fleet. At the time that we ordered the truck, we anticipated delivery to be late in the fiscal year, and we would be outfitting the truck in FY17. To our surprise, the truck is ready early, so we need to accelerate the funding of the materials that go on the truck to put it in service in the current fiscal year. Staff recommends approval.
So moved.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Any further council questions? Any public questions or comments? None. Bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
Aye. Item 6E, approve Florida Department of Corrections contract number W1070 to utilize inmate labor, squads by Public Works Stormwater Division in the amounts of $344,982 for a three-year term with an annual cost of $114,994.
Good afternoon, Darren Park, Public Works. The relevant strategic goal for this agenda item is operational excellence. This is a new contract between the Florida Department of Corrections and the City of Ocala for two inmate work squads for the Stormwater Division. The existing contract expires September 30th of this year. The new contract will be in effect from October 1st, 2016 through September 30th, 2019. And staff, the significance of this is we use the inmate crews for retention pond maintenance, mowing, litter control, and stormwater related projects. Staff recommends approval.
Do I have a motion for approval of item 6E?
So moved.
Second. Motion and a second. Any further council questions? Any public questions or comments on item 6E? There being none, bring it back to council. Lanes will call the roll.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Hilton.
Aye. Item 6F, approve one-year renewal of contract number PWD-14-024 with C.W. Roberts Contracting Incorporated for the citywide resurfacing and sidewalk program in the amount of $2,500,000. Presentation by Darren Park.
Good afternoon again. This relevant strategic goal for this agenda item is quality of place. C.W. Roberts Contracting was awarded the original two-year contract in 2014 and has performed excellent work for us during this time period. The pricing from C.W. Roberts is 20% lower than the next lowest bidder, and they had four bidders that responded. We have a number of projects that we're currently in the middle of, and we'd like to continue to get those projects done, which is why we're asking to renew. And we recommend your approval.
Do I have a motion for approval of item 6F?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Wardell. I will have to say that they did do a sidewalk replacement on Fort King right by my office there, and they did a tremendous job in not impacting the area at all. That was a pretty big section of sidewalk that they took out, so
yeah,
I was impressed. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is, as I'm turning left from 18th Avenue, you created a blind spot with the sign that council paid it.
Take a look at it.
Okay.
We'll address that.
You're laughing, but it was a blind spot.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
We'll take a look at that, seriously.
Okay. Any further council questions or comments? Any public questions or comments? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Hilton.
Aye. Item 6G, approve awarding contract PWD-16-007 to Art Walker Construction Incorporated for the unimproved roads program with an approximate annual expenditure of $174,001.25 plus $17,413 for contingency funds.
The relevant strategic goal for this agenda item is also quality of place. An invitation to bid was issued on April 18, 2016 for the unimproved road at Southwest 7th Place. The bid was opened at 2 p.m. May 18, 2016. Two bids were received. Art Walker was the lowest bidder, and we recommend your approval.
I look for a motion to approve item 6H. I'm sorry.
Can I have a question?
Sure.
Didn't you say you had some problems with his work one time?
They've done good work for us. Sometimes we have differences of opinion, but the end result is trying to generate a quality product that will suffice. We don't always see eye to eye.
Okay.
Okay, that was a motion to approve item 6G. I'm sorry. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any further council questions or comments? Any public questions or comments on item 6G? They're bring it back to council. Lanes will call the roll.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Hilton.
Aye. Item 6H, approve amendment number 1 to contract PWD-15-032 for application of asphalt rejuvenating agent for a cost of $441,039.21 plus $25,000 for contingency.
The relevant strategic goal for this agenda item is fiscally sustainable and quality of place. Public Works has been actively pursuing different techniques and technologies to extend the life of our pavement. As you know, we've had some difficulties with the gas tax, and we're really looking for some ways to help our infrastructure and wring the last dollar that we can out of it. This process is basically a coating on the asphalt surface that works to extend the life of the road, which will extend the time period in between having to resurface the road. We would treat a certain number of roads per year. It's kind of based on an age range. You want to catch them 3 to 5 years after they're resurfaced. And what it does is it extends the life expectancy another 6 to 10 years. We're asking for your approval of this agenda item, and we look forward to making this product work and stretching our dollars.
Is this a proven product, I guess?
Yes. It basically, what it does is it reconditions existing binders that hold the asphalt together. The sun, UV from the sun, bakes them out, and they dry out, and the roads will crumble, deteriorate. This kind of reconditions the binder, makes it elastic and pliable, and allows it to just not fall apart in a shorter period of time.
Darren, the proposal said it'll cover 40 lane miles, so like a two-lane road, that would, I guess, 1 mile of a two-lane road is two lane
Correct.
Miles. Of,
yes, sir.
Gotcha.
Okay, you have a motion to approve item 6H?
Second.
A motion, I have a second. Any further council questions or comments? Any public questions or comments? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye. You again, eh?
Unfortunately.
Item 6I, approve agreement for pole and mast on painting services to Santa Cruz Construction Incorporated for a 3-year term in the amount of $138,937.
The relevant strategic goal for this item is operational excellence. This is essentially a contract to repaint our existing mast arm signalized intersections throughout the city, the ones that are painted already. After a number of years, the paint begins to flake and fade, and they tend to look not so nice. So this contract is put together to address that and try to make us more aesthetically pleasing. And staff recommend your approval.
Okay, I look for approval on item 6I. Do I have a motion to approve? Mr. Wardell, do I have a second? Mr. Musley, any further questions or council? Any public questions or comments? Being done, bring it back to council for approval. 6I, Angel, read the proposal.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren. Good to spend some money.
Yeah. And here comes another one.
We're out now.
Come back next week.
Okay, item 6J, approve award of project package number 2. Water and sewer extensions to GWP Construction Incorporated in the amount of $1,498,927.70.
Good evening, Jeff Falcom, Water and Sewer Director. Tonight what we're doing is on Project 2 is some what we call infill projects. In other words, there's sewer all over in some of the areas, and these are fill-in. So like on 24th near Jervy Gant, believe it or not, 200 feet away from our sewer plant there, we don't have a sewer line. So this is going to be one of those things. We'll use the grant money and our funds to bring the septic tanks offline and be able to hook up sewer. So this project is a great example of quality of place for the strategic goal. And GWP Construction was a low bidder in this one. And we recommend your approval. I'll take any questions you have.
Any questions, Ms. Allen? I look for a motion to approve.
So moved.
I have a motion by Mr. Molliver. I have a second. Second by Mr. Wesley. Any further council questions? Any public comment? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Wesley.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 6K, approval awarding ITB number ELE 16-002 for the purchase and stock of single and three-phase transformers to Resco Utility Incorporated for a 3-year contract with an estimated annual expansion of $1 million.
Mike Boucher, Director of Electric Utility. This is our stocking contract for transformers, which transformers are the devices that we use to take the high voltage off of the power lines and convert it down to a usable voltage that powers the lights and the receptacles for our customers. We have about 15,000 of them in our system. So this is a three-year contract with Gresco to supply all of our transformers, and they will stock some of the higher use items at their facility, which allows us to reduce our inventory but still have those transformers available for emergencies. We'll be saving approximately $420,000 over the next 3 years with the new pricing that we got with this bid. And this contract is for $1 million for each year for the next 3 years, and then we have an option to renew it for 2 one-year periods. So we ask for approval, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Mike, what does a transformer cost, just one?
They vary. The smallest one is about $500. For some of the big three-phase, they can run $30,000 to $50,000. Now, if you get into substations, that's anywhere from $500,000 to about $1.5 million.
Motion right now. I got a motion. Okay. A second. I think we have to wait for Mr. Musley to come back to have enough votes.
I think we got, if we include you, it's
yeah,
we'll
be all right. Yeah, you got three.
Okay. All right. Any public comment? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving to item L, approved contract number REC-16-042 with Florida Department of Corrections to utilize an inmate labor crew for 3 years in the amount of $172,491. Kathy Crow.
Kathy Crow, Recreation and Parks Director. This agenda item furthers the city's strategic goal to be fiscally sustainable. Staff is requesting approval to continue with an existing inmate crew to assist the Recreation and Parks Department in meeting a variety of maintenance services. The current FDOC contract expires on September 30th, 2016. The new contract will be a three-year contract, which can be terminated by either party with 30 days notice. The contract for an inmate work crew is $57,497 per year for a total three-year cost of $172,491. This is budgeted in the Recreation and Parks Department budget. Staff recommends approval.
We have a motion to approve item L.
Second.
I got a second by Mr. Malver. Any further comment?
Kathy, how long do they, how much work do we get out of one crew on a weekly basis? I mean, is that full-time or is that?
That's a full-time crew of five. There are five inmates, right, and one officer. And other than travel time, they have travel time back and forth and then also a lunch break. But other than that, they're full 8 hours a day. But you got to subtract the travel time and the lunch break time.
We give them a lunch break?
Yeah, we give them a lunch break. And I will tell you that our crews are extremely productive. We've been very successful using these contracts. Yeah, we don't give staff lunch breaks, but we do give the inmate crews lunch breaks. I don't want anybody out there to get the wrong idea.
Right.
Any further council comments? Any public comments? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
Aye. Item M, approve renaming Thompson's Bowl to Legacy Park.
This agenda item is for the renaming of Thompson's Bowl and to designate the facility as a place where community members can be recognized for their contribution to Ocala's quality of life. It furthers the city's strategic goal of quality of place. City staff, working with community advocates, has begun the revitalization of the property that we have referred to as Thompson's Bowl. While Thompson's Bowl currently serves primarily as a stormwater retention facility, it does have a walking trail and the potential to be a community asset far beyond just a DRA. Recent revitalization efforts, which are already complete or which are underway, include the aforementioned walking trail, benches, exercise equipment, decorative lighting, and installation of a sculpture. Working with the Governor's Westerkala Neighborhood Revitalization Council, a committee was formed for the purposes of renaming Thompson's Bowl. During that process, it was determined that instead of naming the park after one person, there was a desire to go with a more generic name that allows for the opportunity to recognize multiple community members who had contributed significantly to Ocala's quality of life. Governor's West has asked staff to advance for council approval the name Legacy Park and the concept of recognizing community members along the walking trail. Staff has conceptualized a hardscape plan for how we might recognize people at the park. And if you haven't toggled your screen, if you would do that, you can see a rendering of what that might look like. This would include engraved stepping stones in a paver strip in various locations along the trail. This would be our own version of the Walk of Fame. The concept for renaming and recognition was presented to the Recreation Commission for consideration at their May meeting. The commission unanimously supported renaming Thompson's Bowl to Legacy Park, and they approved the concept of recognizing community members. However, they did ask that staff work with Governor's West to develop solid criteria for accepting and vetting nominees for recognition consideration. The renaming of Thompson's Bowl to Legacy Park rebrands the property as a community park that provides a meaningful conduit for recognition of citizens who have made significant contributions to Ocala's quality of life, and the development of a policy outlining the process and criteria for recommending and vetting nominees will ensure consistency and recognition of citizens at the park in accordance with the set standard now and in the future. This policy would be brought back to council for approval before implementation. Staff recommends approval.
I have a request for approval for item M.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further council comments, questions? Any public comment or questions? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Wardell.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Hilty.
Aye. Item N, approve an updated interlocal agreement between the cities of Bellevue, Dunellen, Ocala, Marin County, and the Florida Department of Transportation, creating the Transportation Planning Organization with somebody who's leading us.
Not quite yet. Greg Slank, TPO Director. A couple of months ago, FDOT asked us to update the interlocal agreement that establishes the TPO, primarily to update several of the citations to state and federal law. Since the agreement was originally signed in 2004, we've actually gone through about four federal transportation bills. So a lot of times when those bills come out, a lot of our language in the federal level gets changed and the citations get changed. There are no material changes to the structure of the TPA or anything like that. It's primarily just updating, again, those federal and state citations. So I'll be happy to take any questions.
Okay, I have a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second. Any questions of Mr. Slade? Comments?
Yeah, why are you leaving?
It's a long story.
There being any public questions or comments of Mr. Slade besides why he's leaving? Okay, there being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye. Okay, thank you. Approve a staff services agreement between the city and transportation planning organization outlining the responsibilities of each entity in the administration of the TPO.
Mr. Chairman, one more time. Greg Slank, TPO. Now, this is the agreement that was approved by the TPO last month, and as the description says, outlines the relationship between the city and the TPO in terms of staffing services, the TPO director position, human resources, and things such as that. So, again, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
So now you're going to put in there all the things you didn't want to do, then you're going to put on the new car?
Yes, sir, pretty much.
Yes. When was the TPO created and the initial agreement between the city and the county and the other municipalities?
Originally, back in 81.
81?
Yes, sir. And typically, we update them every 10 years. We went through, they're updated after each census. This last time we went through it, you know, we reviewed it with DOT and they didn't feel there were any changes. But at the same time, nobody really looked at the citations and stuff. But no, the original one was done back in 1981 or 1982.
Your positions are your city positions, but the TPO was completely funded in and of itself outside of the city, correct?
Yes, sir. The only thing, the city provides a small, about a $15,000 a year match to one of our smaller grants. But as I've always explained to the folks, we're administratively attached to the city but organizationally separated. And if you looked at the city of Ocala's payroll, you can't really differentiate us from anybody else. But the difference is in the organization, whereas I report to you all as a TPO.
Would it be typical in other areas that the TPO in, say, Tampa or Miami be associated with the city instead of the county?
No, sir. Typically, the larger ones in the two examples you use, they function more independently as independent groups. Actually,
smaller ones
are typically attached to a county or an RPC. That's the unique thing about the only two that are attached to a city are ourselves and Tallahassee. So the Tallahassee structure is almost identical to what we have here. But the majority of it is split between counties and RPCs.
Probably learned it from us, right?
They probably did, yes, sir.
Mr. President?
Yes, sir.
Greg, what's the duration of this agreement?
5 years.
Is there a problem if we, council considered a one-year agreement to have a chance to revisit the agreement next year with the new TPO director? Is that?
And that's completely up to you all. You'd probably want to run that back by the TPO since what they approved was a five-year agreement. But I think it's like any agreement. Sure, I think it's subject to come back and to revise. It's up to you all.
I would be in favor of keeping the five-year agreement. I wasn't being critical of the city having. As a matter of fact, I like that better. I think we can do things just as well on stuff like this. So.
Yeah, but I think, Mr. Jones, if that's something you're interested in, I think definitely when a replacement comes on board, definitely may want to have that conversation up front and see if there are some things that you may want to look at revising in the agreement.
Do you see an upside to doing something like that?
I think there were some administrative concerns in terms of the again, you're attached to us administratively. I think there's some areas that staff would like to address and at least have a chance to dialogue to perhaps tighten up, and that was the motivation for that.
And like I said, that's completely up to you all.
But I mean, we have to table this until we go back to the TPO to change it to a one-year.
Have we been out of agreement for some time?
The last one, I think the last one actually expired in 2013 or so, and there was some confusion on whether or not that got extended. So I felt these are actually two of the things I wanted to get done before I left, so they were clean, and we had a new agreement in place.
Mr. Musley, I agree that a five-year contract is in everybody's best interest. I would like the opportunity. It just came up under a general review that there are some concerns about administrative aspects of the current agreement, and we needed a little bit of time to work on it. So if council would entertain, well, again, it has to go back to the TPO board, but I suppose we can always bring the agreement back at any time to amend it as necessary.
It could be very well amended.
Mm-hmm.
If there's valid reasons that are going to benefit both parties,
yes,
then I don't see why the TPO board would.
Mm-hmm. So we'll work with the TPO board on those concerns.
And, John, you're talking about things like procurement,
yes.
Things like that. And I apologize. Tiffany had actually talked to me a year or so ago about that, and I completely forgot about it when it came time to draft this up. But she and I have talked a little bit. So, but that would be my recommendation is leave it as the five. But again, when a replacement comes in, definitely sit down and talk about things like that. I think it's a good idea.
That's satisfied here. Okay.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'll move to approval. I got a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further council or comments? Any public questions, comments? If being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Musley.
Aye.
Mr. Molliver.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell. Mr. Hilty.
Aye.
Thank you all.
I'd just like to take one moment here to publicly thank Greg for the work he's done. And you're sorely going to be missed. And the road runs two ways.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to item P, approve a three-year contract to American Heritage Life Insurance Company for voluntary cancer, critical illness, and accident insurance benefits to employees with an estimated employee-paid premium cost of $288,000.
Jared Sorensen, Human Resources and Risk Management Director. This request is a result of an RFP that was issued by our broker, which we had 12 respondents that responded. And as we sat down with our team to look at the response, which included someone from purchasing, we went through and felt like based on the criteria, the rates, the plan provisions, the benefits, and the services that American Heritage Life Insurance Company would be the best one is to provide that. So this request is to, staff recommends that we approve this three-year agreement with them and ask for your approval. I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
I'd like a motion to approve.
Let me ask, is this per year, $288,000?
That's the total for the 3 years.
For the 3 years?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's all, and the premiums are all paid by the employees, no cost to the city.
I'd like a motion to approve item 6B.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second for item 6B?
Second.
Okay. Any further council questions? Any public questions or comments? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Musland?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty? I apologize. Can I ask council to go back to item 6C for a moment, please? I did put an amended CEP agreement on your desk. Page 1 contains a Scrivener's error, a capitalization error, and page 2, hours of operation, just clarified that the market must operate a minimum of 8 a.m. to 12 noon. Again, those are just two last-minute amendments to the agreement. I have it on your desk. If council could approve the amended agreement, I would very much appreciate it.
Second. I have a motion and a second to approve the amended agreement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any further questions or comments? Public questions or comments? Bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
I'm sorry, let me catch up.
Okay.
Amended agreement, that's 6C.
C.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Musley?
Mr. Wardell, maybe.
Aye.
Mr. Wardell? And who's second?
Musley.
I second.
Okay, Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving on to item 7, consent agenda. Does anybody have anything that they'd like to pull off of the consent agenda?
Move approval of the consent agenda.
I have a motion for approval of the consent agenda. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Wardell. Any public comment on items on the consent agenda? There being none, bring it back to council. Angel, call the roll.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Wardell?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Aye. Item 9, there are no introduction to first readings. So item 10, utility report, there being none. Internal owners report, none. Public communications, none. City manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. President, City Council. I'd like just a couple of moments of your time to allow Mike Bloom, our safety specialist, to give you a brief update. We have many departments from police to electric to water and sewer to sanitation that have some very much operational safety concerns. Mike's been with us for 1 year now and has done a very good job of working with our departments and reducing our number of injuries and our expenses associated with it. Because we have had, unfortunately, some fatalities on the workforce in the past years, it's critically important that we address safety. And so I'd like Mike to share that information with you.
Mike Bloom from HR and Risk. So quick introduction, my background is in safety. I've got a degree, safety and environment management from Slippery Rock University out of Pennsylvania. Came here straight out of school to Lockheed Martin out in the shores. Worked there for 5 years in their environmental safety and health department. From there, last May, moved on with the city. I'm now the safety slash risk management coordinator. And then with that, in February of this year, I went and sat for my the Certified Safety Professional designation. So I do have that now. With that, our overall goal is to reduce the frequency and the severity of the injuries that are occurring to the employees. So with that, we want to focus on the unsafe behaviors that the employees are doing out there. There is a correlation that that studies have found between unsafe behaviors and the types of injuries that occur. So if we can focus on those unsafe behaviors, we can eliminate the rest of that pyramid. So if we can focus on that, eliminate the behaviors, the rest of the injuries hopefully go as well. So with this is just an example of some of the things that we're seeing. The glove, there are standards for glove testing. We found one department, they've got a glove that was 12 years overdue for their testing. So we're cleaning that up. The middle picture is a backup alarm on a forklift. Folks sometimes defeat safety interlock, so they put a piece of duct tape over it so it wasn't as loud. So we're doing field inspections. Another one is communicating the hazards, the electrical panel there. Somebody scratched in caution on it where we could better communicate it. So we're looking at those types of items so that we can reduce the frequency and the severity of the injuries. So with that, on average, we average about 180 injuries per year. This year, we're on track to be around 150, so the frequency is coming down. The average cost per claim, we're averaging, 180 injuries, so basically every 2 days, we were writing a check for about $2,300. That was the average cost per injury that was occurring. That incurred cost is coming down. We're closer to $1,300, $1,400 this year, so that's come down quite a bit. Overall, each year is about $400,000 that we're paying out. With the projections, if everything keeps going well, we're going to be down around $200,000. So that's a significant savings, showing that the severity is coming down. The employees are not getting as severely injured when they do get injured. So this is just the overview of everything we've kind of just shown. It is through May of this year. So if you have any questions.
Great work, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've spoken to City Council in the past about the preparation of the request for proposals to sell the airport business park in its entirety, and I've advised City Council that we're nearing that point of issuing the RFP. I do want Matt Groh to make just a brief two-slide presentation to you about the timing of that and what is involved. Matt?
Thank you. Matt Groh, I'm the Airport Director, City of Ocala. Call your attention to the PowerPoint on that first bullet. Sale of the business park is it? Or was a key topic at the City Council retreat back in January 2016. Staff pulled our resources together and started investigating how we're going to do that. We've come up with a very comprehensive and a detailed RFP. We've done similar exercises like this in the past, I think three other times. Nothing quite like this on this scale for an outright fee simple sale of the non-aviation property at the airport or the airport industrial park. The RFP will be for a single award, bulk sale, no alternates, no incentives will be offered. It's just a fee simple, fair market value sale of the non-aviation property. Fair market value, that's important. It's encumbered by certain FAA regulations that require the fair market value aspect. The FAA will also require any proceeds from the sale to remain in the airport fund for future airport projects. We expect to issue the RFP July 15th, 2016. We've scraped together an impressive budget to advertise in a number of different nationally recognized trade magazines. So we'll hopefully get the word out a lot better than we have in the past on its previous previous RFPs. The responses are due back October 31st. We'll put together our committee and we'll review those responses. Other details, we're looking at six different parcels for a total acreage of 447.4 acres. The RFP will be awarded based on the price, the offer, on the entire 447 acres. The use, the respondents' proposed approach, and their timeline to complete the transaction. Also looking at the capability, the experience, and the track record of the proposer. Excluded from the sale, the airport training site. That's where the original airport rescue firefighting training site, and we've referred to it recently as the airport training site. The Ocala Regional Sportsplex, and then all of the other aviation properties on the airport. We're not selling airport-related or airport use-related properties. So with that, I'd open up to any questions.
Matt, I'm counting the acres here, and I see about 445. And I thought there was about 700 and something plus acres that were developable.
Of both aviation and non-aviation properties. But the pure non-aviation properties, what we're including in the RFP, were at about 447 acres.
All right. That makes sense.
met, all six parcels have to go together, right?
That is the intent of the initial RFP. If we don't get good results from that first attempt, then we can go back and look at it and maybe do an a la carte type of an arrangement.
Matt, so we have to do a fair market value sale, so are we going to get an appraisal after we get the response from the RFP?
We're coordinating with an appraiser right now, putting them on notice. And we're timing that appraisal to coincide with the bid opening, and we'll issue that as an amendment to the RFP so that the respondents have that fair market value and know what number they have to hit.
Mm-hmm. So we plan on providing that up front then?
Yes.
And it's going to be a bulk sale, so there'll be a discount.
It'll be a blended rate.
Most likely.
It'll be a blended rate. Clearly, the properties on 40 will probably have, you know, they have a higher retail value now than the interior properties here, so it'll be blended. As Matt had mentioned, the way the award is structured, we are trying to give points. There's 70 points assigned to price, 15 points are assigned to approach and timeline and uses, and then 15% based upon capability. And as preferences, again, It's staff's recommendation that council support developers who are interested in bringing additional logistics centers to town, additional high energy consumers, water and sewer users, telecommunication users. So there's a hierarchy of preferences that staff is recommending that council consider and give weight to for people that have experience in bringing those kind of projects in.
Mr. President, and didn't we do an appraisal when we were talking about Project Horizon being at the airport?
At that time, that number, Mr. Mayor, yes, at that time, now that's been a year, approximately a year and a half, the numbers came in at $30,000 an acre at that time.
That was only for the one site.
That was, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's not a blended rate.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Just one last thing. We have been in contact with the FAA and FDOT. They are aware of our efforts to pursue this RFP. They're on board with it. We understand that. Any sale of the property still has to go through their review, but they're on notice. They're on board with what we're doing. So,
and what will we do with this money?
What would you like to do with this money?
Yeah, I mean, and do what?
At our last master plan, it identified a 20-year CIP program for the airport. Anything from the airport terminal project that we're doing right now to runway extensions, apron expansions, the full-length taxiway on the west side, any number of those would be eligible for the proceeds from the sale.
Plenty of things to use it for to put back into the airport, make it better.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, I know it's on your reminders list, but I am asking Council for an August 9th final Inland Logistics Center study report. We should be receiving that report sometime, certainly no later than mid-July, and we'll certainly give Council a look at that report prior to the workshop, so that can be a productive process for us. And that's all I have.
Mayor Police Department report.
We get our report.
Okay. City Attorney?
I sent to you, I think Friday, to Council and to the Mayor and to Mr. Zober, the unfortunate reversal of our victory in the discount sleep case. None of you, with the exception of Ms. Rich, were on Council when all this happened, but we had won at the trial court. Not on any of the substantive reasons, but just on the statute of limitation reasons. I still feel confident in the substantive reasons, but we won on the statute of limitations. And the mayor was here. I'm sorry, Ms. Rich, the mayor was here. I can't remember if you were mayor then.
No, council. No, it was councilman. I had a vote in that.
But what had happened is 2006, we passed a fire user fee, and then 2009 or so about that, Council decided to repeal the fire user fee, but repeal it effective a date in the future. So they kept charging it because they'd already put, I presume,
the fire user fee into the budget. So they pass an ordinance repealing it, but not repealing it to a date into the future. Before we ever got to that date in the future, council has changed their mind and passed another ordinance, a third ordinance, repealing the repeal that never really went, that never went into effect. Our argument at the trial court was the statute of limitations began to run at the enactment of the very first ordinance in 2009 or 2006. The plaintiff's argument was that when we repealed it, that sort of re-triggered the statute of limitations. We won on that because our argument to the Judge Scott was that the reality of it is we never repealed the ordinance because we constantly collected the fee, and so it didn't really matter, you know, the nomenclature or the repeal and whatnot. The District Court of Appeal disagreed with that. Right now, we're anticipating filing either a motion for reconsideration with the appellate court or a motion for clarification because the law on what a legislative body does is their intentions. And so a lot of times courts have to interpret, try to figure out what a legislative body's intentions are. Now, typically they look at their intentions by the language of the ordinances or the language of a statute, if it's a state statute, if it's a federal legislation. Here, I think the court was looking at the language of our ordinances about where we enact it, repeal it, then repeal the repeal. But the reality of it is that we never quit collecting the fire user fee. So we think the intention of council was the reality of what happened, not the reality of what the ordinances said. If we pass an ordinance to repeal it, but the repeal of collecting the fire user fee doesn't stop until some date in the future, and then we change our mind, we never really got rid of the fire user fee. So we think the court may have missed that distinction. We're contemplating filing a motion to either clarify or reconsider the decision. So that's where we're at right now. It's just obviously disappointing. You win things and you think you got it done and over. So we'll continue to fight the fight. I talked to Mr. Hilty and Mr. Zober Friday about it, and I think I expressed them briefly, and I expressed to y'all. We're still confident in the substantive outcome, but as things happen or change, we'll let you know. And I can certainly answer any questions that you have.
Any questions? That's it?
Now this has a little bit to do with the fire user fee, but I have, I think I've lobbied council to lobby your both Florida League of Cities through just that body, our local legislative delegation to Tallahassee, and then also our the people we pay to lobby up in Tallahassee under contract. Class actions against municipalities is a growing cottage industry. Class actions in general are, and I was, we were chit-chatting about the class action today against Starbucks for not putting enough milk in their latte. I mean, it really is becoming absurd. The problem with class actions against governments, especially smaller local governments, is it's a potential huge hit on your budget that was completely unanticipated. And I'm not, as a lawyer, I think class actions have their place in society. Especially where smaller people are getting hurt by the actions of sometimes bigger corporations, and they really on an individual basis, they really can't do anything about it legally. But I do think there need to be some restrictions against lawsuits in the class action arena against municipalities. I was recently an expert witness in a class action against Lake County for their fire, wasn't a user fee, it was a fire assessment done in Lake County, and the Lake County ultimately settled the fire at the fee, and the only issue I was there to testify to was the as an expert for attorney's fees, and the judge in that case awarded the claimant's attorney in excess of $1 million in attorney's fees. And the underlying case, they were happy to settle it because they really didn't settle, they really didn't do anything different, but it was really what pocket was going to pay for these fire assessments, this pocket or that pocket from their taxpayers. And the underlying case was, in my humble opinion there, ridiculous. But nevertheless, the lawyer there managed to cobble together three or four citizens to bring this class action against their government in order to pursue this class action. One of my arguments to the court, it wasn't successful apparently because the court didn't agree with me, that the attorney's fees should not be as much as they'd asked for, is because nobody came to the lawyer saying to the lawyer, I've been injured, I think what the county did to me with these fire assessment fees was illegal. The lawyer actually solicited the three or four plaintiffs. He knew them personally and was talking to them about it at a cocktail party. And this all came out as part of the discovery. And he said, are you all interested in being the plaintiffs if I sue the county in this class action? Now, the plaintiffs in those type of cases, they're called the nominal plaintiffs, so they're sort of the representative of all the class, they get it paid too. Now, I was also there to testify about their fees, and the lawyer was asking, I think, $25,000, $30,000 apiece for each one of the plaintiffs for doing nothing more than signing on and being plaintiffs in the case. Now, I was apparently fairly effective as to that argument because I think the judge only awarded them like $5,000 apiece instead of the $30,000 that they were requesting. But the point is that nobody went to a lawyer and said, I've been injured. I've had a wrong committed against me by my local government because of these fire assessments. It was the lawyer soliciting the clients to sue their own local government in order to, you know, bring the class action. Now, I'm not accusing, by the way, I'm not accusing the lawyer of doing anything unethical or anything like that. I am saying, however, I'm bothered by that. I mean, it's not unethical for a lawyer to do that, and certainly we see lawyers solicit on television all the time for different types of cases. There's nothing unethical. I'm not accusing anybody of doing anything unethical, but I am bothered by that from the perspective of nobody thought they had been wronged, and all of a sudden now they're plaintiffs in a lawsuit. So I think it's something we're going to have to deal with more, not just us, but other cities going to have to deal with it more and more in the future. And to the extent that we could get the legislature to look at ways of making sure that if there are suits brought by citizens, the guidelines for doing so are fairly strict, so you can plan for it and not get caught sideways. So now, I'm off my soapbox. Okay. Any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Any questions, Mr. Gilliam?
All right, thank you. Moving on to item 16. Informational items, workshops and new council meetings coming up. Item B, comments by mayor.
No, I just think only one thing. I think you're heading in the right direction with this Midtown Master Plan. I think you're going to see some exciting things when this group comes. I've had the pleasure of working with them in the past, and I think you're all going to really appreciate the work they do, the great people to work with. And in regards to the police presence, as we go through this, you're going to see, I'm already seeing it, a lot of activity in the downtown by the police department and them. Solving a lot of those problems. Saw some of it today, but as we go through there, there might need to be more. But I think we're headed in the right direction. Especially, we need to really, really pay attention to this garage when it opens and make sure it's it opens correctly and people feel very, very safe. So, but everything else is good.
Comments by council members, Mr. Bordell.
I echo the mayor's comments on the safety downtown. I think we should be open-minded. If 2 months from now we feel like what we're doing is not enough to revisit that issue, and mm-hmm. if it meant adding full-time officers, and that's what it means, that's something I would be interested in doing if we needed to do it. And with the garage itself, I think we should look at some sort of permanent presence within the garage. I mean, I don't know if there's a possibility with the construction the way it's going now, if there's a room for an office or anything like that there, but there could be some things there that would be helpful. So other than that, I'm happy to be back. So.
Thank you.
Now, Mrs. Rich, she okay?
Mrs. Rich is spending time with her grandson. So she's... he's still at the chance.
No, I think his place. I'm going on vacation next week.
Me?
Yeah. I wrote up a little thing here, and I was going to give it to the council and see if they would like it or help me with it in some respects. I've been thinking all week about what happened in Orlando with this terrible thing. And if you don't mind, I'll pass what I wrote down. I had to scratch some of it out because I didn't like it. But I'll read it out loud, and I'll give you a copy of it too.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And also, I've been around the police and the fire departments all my life, and we have the finest here in Ocala than anywhere, and it has nothing to do with any individuals or whatever. This is what I feel of what happened to our country, and the citizens need to know what we're going to do to help and to kind of give them security in their minds. I've had so many people stop me and say, what are y'all going to do if something happens? What are you going to do if the hospitals can't help or can't cover 40 people at one time that are wounded? This is just something we can take to a workshop when we can get some answers back and some suggestions. And so let me read it and see if I can get support from the council and see if we can put it on a workshop or something to detail in something. In the light of events that have occurred across the United States over the past 12 to 24 months, considering the potential that exists in our future events that may occur here. Okay. One, the department heads of the police department, fire department, public works, electric utilities, and water department each schedule a briefing for members of the city council within the next 30 days, and we will hold a workshop so it's done in the public, and it will be advertised and shown what we come up with. The purpose of the briefing will be to educate, inform, and discuss each department assessment of what they consider are the two most prevalent and potential threats that are in the city of Ocala and our citizens over the next 12 to 36 months. You know, we have all the road systems coming through Ocala. If they're shut down, the whole state is shut down. So we need to have some kind of plan. And this isn't just Ocala. We need to have the Sheriff's Department involved and all their people. The scope of the briefing should be inform the council about these potential threats to the present and discuss current plans and contingencies and how they would purpose preventing these potential threats. In addition, if these threats were carried out, what are the plans to deal with? Minimize, contain, sustain, and restore operational services or safety to normality. In addition, what internal external coordination is currently being conducted, that coordination agreements have been formalized, and what training deficiencies currently exist. Four, the purpose of this request is to inform the council and to communicate to the citizens of Ocala our intent to desire to be prepared and give our citizens the confidence that we're taking the necessary steps to prepare, coordinate, and to provide the readiness to protect our community.
And this has been preying on my mind, and I certainly don't want to see Ocala go through what Orlando went through. And if we can get together and have this at a workshop, Mr. Zobler, or the councilman, I'm asking y'all to support me in this.
I think we could probably support something like that. The scope of what you're looking for may be a little bit challenging within 30 days, but I think there may be some room on the August 9th workshop to fit at least
the
beginning portion of it.
That's
and
fine.
Then spin off. I mean,
well, we'd want to be careful, obviously, the public and private, because, I mean, we don't want to publicly tell everybody all of our weaknesses.
No,
we won't
not,
do that.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say, and Chief can correct me, but we're not going to stand up and tell the public what we would do if something like this happens, and people that are sitting in the room listening to every detail of how we're going to respond.
Mr. Mayor, that's not what I said.
Oh, no. But
I'm worried about it. Where the blood is going to come from, where the hospital,
absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. I'm with you on that part.
I can answer a lot of this. Greg Graham, police chief. Council, we've, since Columbine, even before Columbine, but certainly since Columbine, we've had extensive and elaborate training on active shooter incidents, wide-scale mass injuries, not just from acts of violence, but car crashes, hurricanes. We have elaborate plans. I would caution council to ask us, for any of us, the fire department, public works, or anybody to stand in front of you in a public meeting and say, these are our plans, these are the top two locations in Ocala we are scared about the most, because then we're telling people what the top two locations are that they could potentially hit. I think your idea of informing council is appropriate and timely, but I would suggest to do it in one-on-one meetings with those department heads so that you're clear on exactly how serious we take this and what we do. The coordination and cooperation through the emergency management, through the EOC and our emergency management plans is pretty extensive, but we keep it close to the vest, because the last thing I want to do, give you an example. We have a plan currently in place for anything that would happen on any of our schools inside the city. Including in that plan are diagrams of the schools, which we keep updated every year, locations of staging areas, locations of potential staging areas, secondary staging areas. The last thing I would want is to show that in a public meeting so that somebody who may have the intention of doing something will go, well, I know that this is where they're going to stage here, and this is where they're going to stage there, so I can take those out, and this is where the person's coming in. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and look at council and go, just trust me, we've got a plan. I'm more than happy to show it to you guys individually. I just think that it's not in the best interest of the city, and certainly not in the best interest of this community to display it for public view.
Well, I think you've misunderstood what I want to do.
Okay.
I understand exactly what you're saying and agree with you, but I think that we need to make people aware that we do have plans, but you don't tell them the plans, that we have contingencies. We have places for people to go.
Yes, and we've actually practiced this with all these agencies, including the hospitals.
Right.
Well, I can do that report right now for you.
They don't know it.
We have a plan.
Okay. They don't know it.
Fred?
We have a plan.
Plan?
We have a plan. I would. I think it would be a good thing to share it with the individual council members. I do, so that you could go out.
A workshop is because all of us could hear it and ask questions at the same time. Now, if you think some of the information shouldn't be given out, I agree with that. Okay, I'm with you. I'm not against you.
I'm just not sure how to.
Well, would you think about it and let's see what we can
come up with? I'm not sure, other than for us to stand, all of us to stand in front of me and go, we have plans in place for all kinds of contingencies.
Well, we're making it too simple. This is not what I want.
I think how does he tell you the plans in a public workshop? And
I said we don't have to tell where things are and what. We're just trying to pick out
what we can do for the citizens, that's all.
Yeah, but it does overlap, and that's where the challenge is.
That's where the challenge is.
Yeah, and I don't want to give anybody an idea.
Well, I have been thinking about this. I wrote it down.
Let's me and you sit and talk.
Okay, I don't care. Fine.
And that's maybe fine. We can come up with something that will.
But this isn't just pertaining to your department.
Oh, no. And all these other departments, although I don't want to say it in a public meeting, but we had an incident the other night that we dealt with, and the response from everybody in the city as it related to that incident was stellar. But we protected an asset that needed to be protected, and there wasn't an issue. What a terrorist thing. It was an idiot. I'm sorry, a citizen who...
It was an idiot.
Did something stupid.
You know, it could happen here as well as down there.
I'll call you tomorrow, sir, and we'll sit down and talk.
Okay.
The point is well taken, and so is everybody's. There's a certain amount of information that you don't want to get out. What you're looking for is the confidence for yourself and for the public to know that we are ready.
That's exactly.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe you can look at August 9th to see if there's something we can put together just as a general, but you really don't want the detail plan. There's no doubt.
Not asking for the detail.
But, you know, sitting one-on-one with each council member, department heads, I think is a good idea.
I'll try to get with you this week, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, I'm fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. All right. I just would like to echo everything on the downtown, the midtown plan. Again, I went through with the mayor when Mig was here. We did get interrupted by some problems with the Sandlot, and then the recession came in. If those things didn't happen, I think we would have been well on our way. These people are very familiar with what we want. We're already seeing it, so I think it's a great thing.
You will want to fight them. You've already worked, but
okay.
Be good.
Thank you, and yeah, if you can express all of our concerns to Ms. Rich. That
yes, I will. Okay. Speak with her tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned. Yeah. Do.